Thank you. My name is John Scott, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
I'm also an alcoholic that has a little problem with his voice tonight. So bear with me. I'll try to enunciate my words somewhat properly. If you don't hear me in the back, send up a flare. Let me know, because I can't hear me. I'm sober since December 19th, 1982. And for that, a lot of people are awful grateful. And I am too. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank the committee for asking Cindy and I to participate in this event. This is a special deal for us. This is a special deal. We put on a conference that is called the Beartooth Mountain Conference. It is a good conference. Yeah, Don and Karen was there just a few months ago and just did an excellent job. I appreciate them coming. And there's a lot of people here that's been there. Bob has been there. And next year, Bob and Linda's going to be there. And we're looking forward to seeing those folks. Polly and Dave. Polly and Dave was at our group before we even did Beartooth Mountain Conference. We're a bunch of crazies up there. You know, we decided that after our first anniversary that we were going to have a party. So we decided to invite some speakers for our party, and we had like a mini conference, kind of like what we're doing here, except there's only two or three speakers, and we just wore them out. I mean, you'd come in like on Friday night, and we'd have you talking Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday morning, and finally you got on the plane. People just wore plumb out. We liked it so well, we decided to have 17 birthdays in a row. And I don't mean a year apart, I mean 30 days apart. You know, of course, it's like Bob says, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing to excess. So we did that, and our membership grew from about 20 people to about, I suppose 60, something like that. And Billings has got about 100,000 people in it, and that kind of a growth is kind of unheard of. There are some people here that I want to stand up. Robbie and Cindy and Earhart and Mr. Shiloh. Those people are sicker than others. I just want you to know that. They moved down here to get away from my grasp, I guess. And it's our loss and your gain. They're really excellent members and they're great people. I just love you dearly. And I'm tickled to see you here. And I'm really tickled to see my old friend Mike and Karen. And their sidekick, Mr. Happy, Mr. Steve. They're going to take us, I guess, back to Dallas tomorrow. And they've been good friends of ours for a little while. I want you to know, and I started to say this, my mind is goofy, so just bear with me. I wanted to say this before I got started. This is an important event for me. This is an important event for my wife. We started that Beartooth Mountain Conference. My sponsor at the time that I started that Beartooth Mountain Conference was Jim Shaw. And he'd started the Canyon Conference, and he started a conference over in Los Angeles called Mountain High. Those conferences were designed after this conference and the one that was held over at Cedar Glen and then Blackstone. And Cindy and I was able to visit or be at Blackstone earlier this year. And I mean, it's just like, how does that work? I mean, we're a bunch of goofballs up there in Montana, and we just want to do a little A&A stuff, you know? And we went out, and we tried to hear who was doing what and how, and we ended up doing what you people do. And you heard the saying that we stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, I got to tell you, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And sometimes we think what we do, you know, is just kind of insignificant. It's what we do. But I'm going to tell you something. Because of you people here at this conference, we have a conference in Montana. Now, that's no big deal to most people, but for us, that's something. And I thank you. I thank you for asking. thank you for asking us. I'm sorry about my voice, but dim's the brakes. If we need to, I'm sure there's 40,000 alcoholics would be glad to come up here and finish, you know. So one thing about us, you know, we won't go across the street to hear somebody talk, but we'll drive 150 miles to hear ourselves, so. Free of charge, too, I might add. Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm here to kind of get it straight. She lied to me. I mean, she lied to me right off the bat. I had no idea. Long time after we were together, she says, I got something to tell you. And I thought, and then I could tell it was serious. I thought, my God, she's got cancer or something. She's dying. Because she was serious. And she told me she was, I think at that time, 13. And I just laughed. I thought, oh, she's got a sense of humor. How cute. You know, and I went and talked to her mother because I says, oh, bull. And she said, no, it's true. I said, no, I'm going to go talk to your mother about this. And her mother told me, I just couldn't believe it. And I said, this is it. This is jailbait. I'm not going to get in the middle of this deal. And I left her alone, too, by God, for, what was it, 4 days, something like that. She had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. We have been through hell and back, and we are so tickled to have sobriety together, because this is a long ways from where two kids from Billings was getting together to, you know, to start out a life. You know, I was an alcoholic, I think, long before I took my first drink. Long before I took my first drink, I can remember living in Miles City, Montana, in grade school, and I was walking to school, and I had these two kids behind me, and those kids said something that affected me for years. They said that I walked funny. And you know, for years I tried to walk right, and I couldn't walk right. I just don't know what it was, and I catch myself at one time, I'm walking wrong, I need to walk right. You know, and I get to thinking that I was doing it wrong, And you know, I was very shy. I was insecure as heck. And in Miles City, they had, and I think there's enough people here with gray hair. I see, this is the way we used to do it. You know, the gals would be on one side of these school dances, and the guys would be on the other side, and you'd walk across and you'd ask them to dance. And they'd say no. You know, and I would take all I could get to just get to the point where I was willing to ask them, and they'd say no. And I'd go, I was done. What am I going to do with that? I leave. I couldn't dance. My dancing skill was gone. I can't walk. And I'd have this, and I'd sit there and I'd try to talk to people. And I would try to just have a normal conversation, you know, and to this day, I can't do this right. It wasn't very long ago. I was talking to a friend of mine, and you guys know, I'll tell you who it is. I asked him how his wife was, and he's coming down the elevator in Chicago when I was with you people. Coming down the elevator, she says, well, she's still been dead for 6 months now. You know, so I'm, you know, it's like, I can't even carry on a conversation with anybody right. You know, it's just like, I get to thinking I'm a little slow, and I probably am, you know, oh, thanks, Bob. And living a week with Bob is like taking off 2 years of your life, you know. I'll tell you one thing, though, you can sure play a lot of golf with Bob, because if you're within 4 miles of that hole, it's good, you know, so. And I needed every one of them because I wasn't playing like a bit. But you know, I took a few drinks of alcohol. I can remember the very first night I took some booze. And it's like, we were driving in this car, and me and some of my friends had got this bootlegger from over on the other side of town where I later lived. We got this booze, and we started drinking this stuff. And I mean, it wasn't, I think we got, two cases of beer or something like that. There's only four of us, you know. And I can remember hiding that stuff right off the bat. I mean, already I'm hiding stuff. And I mean, we got a lot to drink here. And I can remember that very first night. That very first night, I could walk and I could talk. And I walked across that dance floor and I asked that gal to dance with me, and she said no. And I thought, you poor, poor lady. And I just asked the next one. It didn't bother me. And it altered my perception. It changed the way I thought. It changed the way I felt. It changed the way I talked. It changed the way I walked. And I found my I found myself craving it, because it seemed to add to me the parts that was missing. The parts that I didn't, you know, it's like I'm whole now, finally. I'm getting to where I'm kind of halfway whole. I can live. I can breathe. I can think. My best thinking was drinking. Oh, I had some good things. I can remember telling Cindy, yeah, but if you're in the pressure I am, a few drinks, and I have some intuitive thought. And she didn't, you know, that's, she didn't really believe that too much. But anyway, I remember, you know, these are the things that was happening to me when I first drank. Cindy talked a little bit about our life and about how things got, and they really got upside down. I mean, when we met each other, I was playing in a rock and roll band. I was having fun. Booze and drugs weren't a problem in my life at that time. But we got married, and 13 years later, booze and drugs began to be a big problem, and we were having all kinds of trouble. And I can remember, you know, I said my sobriety date was December 19th. Well, I can remember the 18th, and that's really important for me to remember the 18th, because the 18th is the morning that I woke up in a strange basement again with no money in my pocket again, and I'd spent my whole paycheck. And I am so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I am absolutely scared to death that people find out what the heck I did, and I don't even know what it was. I always hate that when you have to ask people about what you did in such a way that they don't know that you don't know, and somehow you've got to work it in there to where they understand that you know, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. I didn't know what they were talking about. I wasn't even there. I'm sitting there trying to pick up my life on a hearsay. And I found myself, talking to this guy. His name was Johnny. And Johnny was like an old man. I mean, heck, he was 65 years old. And me and him was drinking together. I'm 35. And we've been running on this runner for, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. Because I'm a runner. I get drunk and I get gone, you know. She'd say, why don't you call me? Well, I tried that once. Geez, you call her up and she, you know, that's enough. I'm not going to do that anymore. I found myself really kind of desperate. And I remember talking to Johnny and says, you know, Johnny, we've got to do something about this drinking of ours. This is killing us. I can't do this anymore. And Cindy and I were just at war with each other. I believe strongly in the scorched earth policy. My attorney told me that whenever I got this divorce from her, there is no way in the world of my track record that I'm going to end up with those kids. Now, I hadn't even hardly paid attention to those kids until that happened. And then it dawned on me, those are my kids. Hey, how's the deal here? Those are my kids. And I started right then. You know, now, I know that some of these new guys came in here for the right reasons, but I'm going to tell you what I went into Alcoholics Anonymous for. I was here just a few days, and I come up with this great idea. You know, I'm going to stay sober for a year, maybe a year and a half. And at the end of that time, she was working at a bank, you know. She was one of them people that can find jobs. I was hanging around people at the Keg Bar. Now, the Keg Bar is a place where all the losers go, okay? And I was a loser. I fit right in. Cindy one time, she says, these aren't your friends. Why are you here? Because these are my friends. And I remember her thinking, or she told me, she thought, you know, God, you're worse than I thought you was, you know. But the people at the Keg Bar, there's people in there that have been trying to get a job for years, you know. And I walked in there one day and said, you know, Cindy's quit me and she's going to get a job. And they laughed, and I kind of laughed too, because, you know, they've been talking about it. We was in a major depression at the time up in Montana. And, you know, she went out that same day and got three jobs and worked all three of them. I didn't know I was married to an Al-Anon yet. And Al-Anons are a different kind of a breed, you know. They've got a way of thinking that we don't even, you know, Bob and I was talking about, they can balance checkbooks. They know how to, you know, they just know how to do things that we don't know how to do. And we don't want to tell them, you know, we don't want to let them know that we don't know how to do it. So some of us take a long, long time before we finally surrender to the idea. Maybe she ought to have the checkbook. Since I gave her the checkbook, our money problems kind of just went away, you know. You know, I think it's probably something I did, but I can't figure it out yet. But truth of the matter is, she's already working. You know, she's already working. So I thought, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to AA for a few days, you know, like 365 plus. I'm going to stay sober. I'm not going to have a drink. And at the end of the time, when I decide, I'm going to go buy me a whole bunch of dope. I'm going to stick it in her purse. She's going to be at the bank. I'm going to call the police, and I'm going to say, just want you to know, there's a big drug deal going on in the bank, and I thought you might want to know who it, you know, who's doing it. And she'd get thrown in jail. I'd end up with the kids, and a year and a half later, I could drink again. Now, that's why I came to AA. I mean, but I got to tell you, I had the mind of a newcomer, and I thought like that for 5 seconds, and 5 seconds later, I was on a different track, you know. But I can remember thinking about that, you know what? You know, one of my tracks was about coming to AA. This is for the new guys. You know, what if I'm making a mistake? You know, sorry about your bad luck showing up in AA, but, you know, what about it? What if I'm making a mistake and I'm not really a true alcoholic? What then? What happens if I live, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 years of my life in relative peace and ease and comfort and having the time of my life, and I find out at the end that I'm not an alcoholic? My God, you know, hell, I could have spent a lot of time in jail, you know, but no, you know. So, you know, sorry about your bad luck. I hope you stick around, get yourself a sponsor, get involved in a home group, read that book. You know, what's that book wrote by a bunch of drunks, you know? And, you know, don't drink. It's a big deal. Some people miss it. Don't drink. You know? Works a lot better. We got guys in our group that still drink. And they're welcome. They're welcome there. If you drink, drink. But it just don't work very good. You know, you still get thrown in jail. You know, I never got thrown in jail. Now, there are people in our group that's been thrown in jail when they're sober. But I'm not one of them. Anyway, we decided we were going to go see this guy named Frank. I'm kind of getting my story messed up, but I'm amazed I'm talking. We got in the car and we went to see this Frank. This Frank was a feed salesman who was working there in Billings, and he'd come out from time to time and helped us with our feed deals and stuff. And I was asking Frank, it was noon, I was asking Frank if he wanted a drink since he was at the bank. And he says, no, thank you. Now, Frank and I drank a lot together. Frank was my drinking partner. And Frank and I, you know, I mean, we got in a fight one night, an argument, because Frank said that I was opinionated. And I argued with him all night long and finally proved him wrong, you know. Anyway, we went to Frank because Frank had told me this day that he wouldn't drink with me at the end of the day when he finally had to leave because he was about ready to go crazy because his drunk was hanging on to him. He says, I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I says, Frank, you're going to where? He says, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I says, my God, Frank, you drink just like I do. He says, yeah, I know. And I says, well, what do you think, Frank? He says, do you think that you might take me with you? And he says, oh, no, I'm not going to take you with me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, why not, Frank? I'd like to quit drinking. He says, because Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to quit drinking, and you're drinking, so obviously you don't want to quit. Now, Frank was really new, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong. This is what happened, okay? So here it is, 6 months later, me and Johnny, I'm woke up in this basement again. I don't have any money. I'm desperate. I don't know what to do. I can remember telling Johnny, we got to go see Frank. And we drove down the feed store to see Frank. Went in there. Frank was just tickled to see us. He had these 20 questions. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the 20 questions. It's a test that no one can pass except Al-Anons. Al-Anons can pass it. Every once in a while, just for the fun of it, and Sydney has the girls over and says, here, take the test. They can't even take the test right, you know. And so anyway, but I took the test, and I cheated, and I still won. I mean, shoot, you know, how do you get answers 3 wrong, and you're sure you're a locked dead cinch alcoholic, something like that? I had like 8 of them wrong out of 20, you know, and I cheated on them. I cheated hard, and I still lost. And he was just tickled to see us. He says, I tell you what, don't drink. We walked out in the car, and we was already drinking, because in the mornings, I got nervous, and I always have to have a little something to calm me down. He says, oh, I see you're drinking already. He says, well, we was asking him to take us to a meeting. He says, no, we're not going to take you to a meeting now. I says, I thought you guys were wanting to quit drinking, but obviously you don't want to quit drinking. He says, but I'll tell you what, tomorrow, if you don't drink, I'll take you to a meeting. So, you know, he says, if you want to, spend the rest of the day drinking as much as you can. So that sounded good to me. So, so me and Johnny, we went down to the keg bar, and at 9 o'clock in the morning, with my 20 questions, I couldn't get anybody in that. There's only five of us in there, me and this other Johnny and the bartender and two other people. You realize that nobody could pass that test at 9 o'clock in the morning? And it was obvious to me. You see, I got the secret weapon. I'm sure that some of you people have a secret weapon. It's this thing between my ears that knows the truth, even though it's a lie, and we just believe it's the truth anyway because it's what we want to believe. And that's what I did with this thing forever. I found myself sitting in this bar, and we're reading the 20 questions, and there's nobody passing. Nobody passed. And here it is. Alcoholics, the name Alcoholics Anonymous is going to keep people away from you people anyway. And so you come up with this special, special test that traps stupid people like me, although I won't admit it. And at a time when I'm down, and I'm reading this 20 questions, and I accidentally fall in the hands of AAs. And I start doing what you do, and about 4 or 5 months from now, you have some guy that comes along and takes $25 from me for the rest of my life, every month. That's how I knew that. I know things like that, and it just comes out of nowhere. And I just, and there it is. You know, and I expressed this idea to these other guys, and they, you know, we was kind of agreed on. And all you have to do for it, to think like that, to have that kind of keen intellectual ability, all I have to do is have some other idiot go, yeah, that's right. And that's all I got. That's it. And, I mean, not only is it truth now, it's wrote in stone. I mean, I got it down pat. And so I can remember just thinking, you know, well, it doesn't matter because I am hurting so bad. What happened to me wasn't so much of what happened outside as it was what happened inside. Inside, I began to just kind of like fall apart. I mean, I was doing things that I honestly did not want to do. I was feeling ways that I honestly did not want to feel. I was so crazy. I was insane, and I know I was insane. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt if I was to go into a psych ward that they would have kept me. Because I was having thoughts, suicidal thoughts all the time, homicidal thoughts almost all the time. But I got to the point where I was believing that I needed to kill my wife and kids. And the reason I needed to do that was because it was her fault my life was so bad. And those poor kids, I mean, what are they going to, how are they going to live once they know that their dad killed their mom and then killed himself? And they got to go. And I had been dwelling on this thought for quite a while. And it wasn't something that was going away. It was something that I was starting to live with. And it was driving me even crazier. And it scared me to death. And I couldn't talk to no one about it. I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. It was so against what and who I am. I knew I was such a loser and a failure. And I knew I was a coward and a liar. And just everything that I just got disgusted at, I was. And it just killed me. It just killed me. It just drove me crazy. I couldn't, my mind wouldn't quit thinking. And people would say, well, you know, you just need to quit drinking. And I thought, geez, if I quit drinking, my head's going to fall plumb off. You know, and it's like the only thing that's happening to me is every once in a while, I kind of get to where I couldn't even hardly get drunk anymore. I don't know if anybody, you know, I'm sure there's people here that you can't get sober and you can't get drunk. You just kind of drink, you know, and you can, and then the next day you go in there and you have two cans and just be bombed, you know. It's like lack of control, absolutely, you know. So I like to do a little, you know, little white pills with the crosses, and that way you didn't pass out, you know. You could kind of stay up all night and half the next day, you know, and you could drink, and it just seemed like the normal thing to do. I don't know if I got relief then. I think I got relief, but I really don't know. Because I don't know if it was working for me. I don't know if it was or it wasn't. I just know one thing. I was living in hell. I was living in hell. And I needed something. I needed some change. Something had to happen. And so that next day, that Sunday morning, it was December 19th, that day I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went early because they asked me to go early. And I find myself we went to this restaurant. And I mean, I hadn't ate hardly anything in days and weeks. Because, I mean, why waste a $200-$300 drunk on a $4 meal? I mean, you don't want to do that, you know. And besides that, those little white pills, I'm losing pretty good weight. And I come in here almost looking anorexic. And now, you know, look at me. Look what AA's done to me, you know. But same with you. And anyway, I found myself going to that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or going to the cafe, and I met a guy named Richard. Richard was Frank's sponsor. And Richard was a guy, he wore a three-piece suit, he wore these wingtip shoes, you could see your reflection in them. He sat up really straight because he had a bad back, and he smoked cigarettes just like this constantly. You know, he was a nervous wreck, and he was a used car salesman. Now, I had some pretty good people help me a lot. I had doctors tell me that if I didn't quit drinking, I was probably going to die. And, you know, then I was bleeding from the inside out, and if I didn't quit it. And, you know, I'd think about that kind of stuff, but I'd always think, you know, I need to get a second opinion, because he's talking about pretty drastic stuff about quitting drinking, you know. Then we go to these shrinks, you know, and we had some really fun with some shrinks. Cindy and I had the blast with some. I had some with my... I mean, it's just like, those guys don't know, and we ain't going to tell them, because if we tell them, they might help us. We don't want them to help us, because they... You know what they're going to say? Quit drinking. You don't quit drinking, you want something else, you know. You know, I'd rather be crazy than an alcoholic. I really would. At least when you're crazy, you can go to 2 North, that's a nut house in Billings, and you can get a few pills, and after you get out, you can go drink again. But if you're an alcoholic, now that's a different story. You know, if I go to AA and I say, look, I'm really a real alcoholic, then you guys got an answer for me. If you guys got an answer for me, I know what it is. It means no more drinking. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I love that. You know, no more drinking. How does, you know what that means? That means for all the rest of my life, I can't drink, but I'm going to want to. And I thought that's what you guys were selling. I thought that was sobriety. I'm going to have to just somehow not drink the rest of my life, you know? And that's not what this is about. Alcoholics Anonymous is about how do you live life sober successfully. And that, to me, was something new. There was guys in that group that was laughing and playing and joking and I knew what the deal was. These guys were those guys that I was telling you about that would get guys like me to pay them the $25 a month. These guys were the paid counselors that were going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they really wasn't really alcoholics. You know why I knew they weren't alcoholics? Because they weren't unhappy like I was unhappy. These guys were laughing and joking because they had my money, you know. They didn't have any yet, but I knew they was going to get it in a minute, you know. I watched them. You know, you got to watch these people in here. They're a sneaky bunch. And I remember watching them guys, and it took me 3 or 4 or 5 meetings before I really felt comfortable. But even in that first meeting, with all my skepticism, I still felt something here. I felt a little tinge of hope. I thought maybe, just maybe, you guys, what you had here was valuable. And I thought maybe I could have a piece of it, but I didn't know. I really didn't know. It scared me to death. I am totally scared to death when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And them old guys that say, you're scared to death, I go, I am not. What the hell's the matter with you? I'm a tough son. I'll whoop you. No, come on. You know? And they go, and you know, on the inside, I was so terrified. I was so afraid that Alcoholics Anonymous wouldn't work for me. The only thing that made me more afraid than that was what happens if it does? What happens if Alcoholics Anonymous works? And I spend the rest of my life wanting to drink and can't drink. That's even worse, you know. And then I was afraid she was going to leave me. And then she got to going to meetings. I was afraid she was going to stay. I mean, I just... You know, it's like... And I'm going through life. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. You know, I'm a tough guy. I'm not a tough guy. I'm scared to death and dying on the vine. And you guys picked me up and put me back together. I didn't have a kind and loving home group. Now, I know you guys are kind and loving. I'm going to tell you the kind of home group I had. There were some people in there. Millie, the little gal who was kind of like the grandmother type. She was sitting over in her chair. It was important for her to be in her chair. When she's in her chair, there was a sense of well-being in that group. And when she sat in her chair and I'd sit behind her, she'd say, "Look at all the miracles." And I'm "I don't see no miracles tonight, Millie. I don't know what you're drinking, but obviously I'm not getting any of it." And then there's this gal named Margaret. Margaret's deal was, you'd call Margaret tonight, and she'd say, she'd be sitting there, and she'd say, "My name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't. Thank you." And you call Margaret 2 years later, and she say, "My name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't. I thought, what a lame, sick message. I mean, the woman didn't have nothing, just nothing, you know. My sponsor was this used car salesman, and he insisted. Well, he didn't insist. He always knew what I wanted, and he had a way to make me believe that what he said was what I wanted. And he made me believe that what I wanted was this diesel car. And I bought the diesel car because my car kind of was a high oil maintenance type car. It just kind of like you're driving down the road, it's just like smoke coming out the, you know. And I mean, I lived out in the country. I had 30-some miles to drive to get out and I needed a car that I could get back and forth. And, you know, but my early days in Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't, I'm in AA, everything's what my early days in Alcoholics Anonymous is just a little better than my drinking days, not much. And there was guys in our group like Nick. Nick was a little short guy who had a really shrill voice. And Nick would sit there, and he would just hammer you. I mean, it didn't matter if you was new or years old. Old guys didn't like him. New guys didn't like him. He'd just hammer you. Of course, after he died, they all called him Saint Nick, you know. and then there was another guy. He was an attorney. His name was Rotten Ralph. And Rotten Ralph would sit he'd be sitting in the room, you know, and some new guy would say something stupid, and you know how we are. When we're new, you say it, and you know it's stupid, but it's already out, you know. Well, that wouldn't help. Ralph would sit there and explain it to you about how stupid you are because you said that, and it wasn't what, you know. And at the end of his little spiel that he'd have, he'd pull a dollar out of his pocket and say, "Now, if I have pissed you off enough that you think you need to go get a drink, let me buy you your first drink." Now, these are the guys I sobered up with. There's another guy from Arkansas, and his name was Gerald. And Gerald thought I had this attitude. I don't know how he ever got that idea, but he'd ask me how I was doing, and I think my standard answer was probably, you know, "Hate you, hate God, hey, you know, stuff like that, you know." And Gerald says, "Look, that's enough." He says, "I'm so sick and tired of your... You know, I've only been there like 3-4 months. He says, "I'm so sick and tired of your attitude, your poor attitude." He says, "I'm going to tell you what." He says, "I don't care what you tell them other people, but from now on, when I ask you how you're doing, you're going to say, 'Well, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much.'" Cindy is crazy. I am crazy. Every night I go home to this crazy, insane, goofy woman. Every night. And she's going, "You wasn't that bad. You don't need Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not as sick as they were." And I'm going, "Yeah, but I think I'll keep going to meetings because at least when I was at the meetings, I was away from her. And that was a plus." You know? And I can remember... one day I was going into AA, and Nick's favorite deal was, "There's no sense, no reason whatsoever for me to remember your name unless you've been here for 8, 9, 10 months. None." And I know that there's nobody in this room that thinks like this, but I thought, all right, by God, you old fool, I'm going to make you remember my name. And so I walked up to him, and I gave him my best dog and pony show. I you know, a tear in my eye, because I always, if I couldn't blow my way through, I'd cry my way through. It didn't make any difference. So I'm sitting there crying. I'm saying, Nick, you don't understand. I'm married to this goofy, crazy woman, and God damn right she's crazy. Anybody live with you for 13 years got to be out of their mind, No, but you don't really understand. She's just insane. And he jumps up, and this is like after the meeting, it's like 8 or 9 people around, And he jumps up and he says, so you're an alcoholic. He says, what the hell are you going to do about it? And I'm just humiliated. I can remember it's one thing for him and me to have a conversation, but whenever other people out in the room start hearing what's going on, and my head's as crazy anyway, and I this is it, I'm quitting, I'm through with it, and I started going to the room, out the door, and he was a crippled little old man, and he beat me to the doggone door, and there's a refrigerator there, and he pushes me up against that refrigerator, and he says, all right, damn it, he says, you're wasting your time, you're wasting their time, and you're dang sure wasting my time. Why don't you just get the heck out of here? Go get drunk. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to go get drunk. And out of nowhere comes Rotten Ralph over the top of us. Here's $1. Let me buy you a first drink. Let me buy you a first drink. And I was absolutely insane, crazy. I jumped in my brand new diesel used car. We was in a gravel parking lot. I've got to spin gravel all over the place because he's crazy as he is. I can't stand him, Thank God. Thank God I had to drive 30-some miles. Because as I was driving, I was beating the dash, I was honking the horn, I was cussing, I was just crazy. And somewhere in those 30 miles, it dawned on me, so you're an alcoholic. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And something changed. I don't know. I don't know if it changed that night. I don't know if it changed the next 24 hours, but something changed. There was an awakening. There was a paradigm shift. Something had happened. Those guys knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly what the doctor ordered, because I'm gonna that's my voice. I'm the kind of guy, if you pat me on the back, you'll kill me. And that's the deal. At least at that time. Okay? And what happened is I started to realize that if I could just give up on me having it my way for just a little bit, maybe things could change for me too. And I found myself the next day or two, you know how we are. You get good, and then you go off the deep end again. They call it the roller coaster ride. It's, wonderful! it's just my God. And I can remember going a couple of days later, I'm going to go back to Gerald. I'm going to say, Gerald, how you doing, John? Well, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. I'm not gonna let them old guys run me out of there. I have principles. And it dawned on me again. I can remember going back to Gerald sometime later, saying, Gerald, you know what? I am getting better in every way, every day, and I don't know how that worked. I don't know how that worked. He says, I do. It's really simple. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. Do what we do, you'll get what we get. Don't do what we do, you won't get what we get. Too simple. Them to go to meetings, stay sober. AA's got a J in one of those little lines. And we started working in the book, and Richard took me to the part in the big book where it's the doctor's opinion. It talks about alcoholism, talks about allergies, you know. And I found myself, I'm allergic to apples, bananas, cherries, and avocados. If I eat them, my face swells up, my chest swells shut, and I can't breathe. And I found myself, looking at that thing and thinking a little bit about that. And, you know, my doctor told me what to do about those apples. It wasn't very scientific or nothing. I mean, that was a pretty straightforward deal. News person, you know what he said, don't you? You know, he said, don't eat them, you know. That's why most of the people that I sponsor are bald right here. don't eat them. You know, and you know, there's a big difference between my problem that I have with alcohol and my troubles that I have with apples. It's totally different because, see, alcoholism is a twofold disease. It's because of the way I think. Once I quit drinking, all I seem to be able to do out of nowhere is start thinking about drinking. And once I start drinking, I lose my control over how much I should drink. And then I say, you know, I'm just drinking until I finally wear out my body or I wear out my pocketbook or somebody throws me in jail. And with apples, it's a little different. You know, I have never to this day, and I hope this makes sense to you, I have never to this day decided I'm having a miserable damn day and I'm going to go in the shopping center. I'm going to get my 6 apples. I'm going to put 2 apples in the glove compartment. I'm going to put 1 in the trunk for later. I'm going to put 1 in the seat just in case, and I'm going to eat 1 on the way home, and when I get there, by God, I'm going to eat another one right at her, you know? It has never happened to me with apples. I have never been in a restaurant and I look over there and my God, look at those people over there. Look at what they're having with their meal. They're having fruit salad. You know, it just doesn't work that way. You know, it's fruit salad, big deal. There's an apple over here. I mean, I got apples. Yeah, there's apples upstairs. I just thought about that. Maybe after the meeting. Well, it's just not there. Sorry. It's not there. But now booze. You want to talk about booze. Booze has power. You put booze in the glove compartment of your car. You put booze under your seat that you're going to drink 3 days from now. And you go, I can do 3 days. I can do 3 days. I can do 3 hours. It's different, ain't it? And the reason it's different is because we have a peculiar mental twist. Our problem is not the drinking. Our problem is the thinking. And whenever I start to think is when I start to drink. And Alcoholics Anonymous has been able to change the way I think. Alcoholics Anonymous has been able, through their actions of the steps, through the actions of sponsorship, a home group, and doing what we do, it changes. And I find myself today, without any kind of a thought whatsoever, I no longer fight it. I no longer resist it. It's not a battle with me because I understand beyond a shadow of a doubt that I am an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I will self-destruct left up to my own devices. I am the kind of person that will lie, deceive myself until I die from it. And if I don't surround myself with people like these guys and gals in this room, I will do that. And the reason I'll do that is, like an old lady, some old gal came to our group one night, and she says, the reason we do that is because our brain leaks. It's good enough. You know? Who cares? That's the way it is. You know, we always have to know why. You know, why is that? It's just the way it is. Don't worry about it. Just do what we do. And you'll find yourself living a life beyond your wildest dreams. You'll find yourself doing the dangest things. Heck, you might have to go to Billings, Montana one of these days to give an AA pitch to a bunch of crazies. And you just have the time of your life, you know? And I can remember when I first walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, my life is over. My God, my life is over. I am such a loser. And there's a lot of truth in that. But my life wasn't over. My life was just beginning. And I don't care if this is your first time or your 31st time. There is hope here. There is success here. This does not fail. The only way you can make this thing fail is not do it. Just don't do it. And we have the, it's like water going through rock. We have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and that means that we come up with a dangerous reason to get drunk and to do things. And if I don't have that home group connection, and we talked about home group the first night, Thursday night here, if I don't, I'll tell you how good my home group is to me. You know, I'm kind of the head dog around that joint. I'm somebody said it, I'm the owner. I'll tell you how the owner works in my group. Cindy and I, one night, we got in a fight. I think we were probably fighting over how to put the toilet paper on the roll, you know, but something really important. And we had left our house, and we had gotten this big fight. And we drove from our house to where we met, and at that time, it was only about 8 or 9 blocks away. And I mean, we were getting, something really important, you know, just critical. And I got out of the car, and I was walking funny again. But the people who saw me walk and knew that something was wrong. And those goofballs came up to me, didn't they? They just surrounded me and wanted to know what the hell was going on with me. Just because I parked my car funny and walked funny. Now that's the value of a home group. Because people in your home group can see that. If I'm bouncing around from this group to that group to this group to that group, I'm hiding. Because I don't want to be invested. And I don't want anybody to be invested in my life. I want somebody in my life to tell me that I'm making a mistake because this thing don't work. Sorry, it don't work. I got tons and tons of proof. Now, it'll tell you how that's not true, but I have that. It's like there's almost two of me out here. I always thought it's because I was a Gemini, you know. You know, it's not. It's because I'm an alcoholic. I have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. The book says our problem is centered in our mind. And that's why I have to begin to develop a belief and a faith and a power greater than myself, because of myself and by myself, I cannot do this thing. If I could, I would not be here. You know, Lord knows everybody in this room has tried it over and over and over and over and over. And you just can't do it. You just cannot do it. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope you could grab hold of somebody in here and just hang on to them. And it doesn't matter what they say. Just do it. Just do it. Just because you come to meetings for a while, everything does get good for the most part. You learn how to deal with problems that I never could deal with before. But it doesn't mean that you're exempt. I can remember one time whenever I was 11 years sober, I think, and my sister had this store. And I was sponsored. I've always been very fortunate. I've always sponsored a lot of guys. And they have helped me so much. I mean, my guys helped me. It's not the other way around. My guys helped me stay sober. They helped me be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings a lot of times because some new guy said he was going to be there, and guess who don't show up? But guess who's there, you know? And it's a trap. You get to sponsoring people, and you think it's because you're sponsoring them and you're doing it. It's not about you. I mean, it is, but it ain't. It's not about who you are. I mean, who you are because you got all these guys that you're sponsoring. It's about what's going on inside because you're sponsoring these guys. I'm concerned about your well-being. I want you to do well. I want you to get the good job. I want you to have a good wife. I want you, and because of that, I have to be better than I would be by myself. What a gift. Just get me out of the way just a little bit. When I get out of the way, God comes in. When I get out of the way, God comes in. And I find myself in a place where I never thought possible. I believe in the power greater than myself today, and I didn't believe in that. I had a hard time. I had a hard, hard time with God. God hated me, and I hated him right back when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you what, I am a living example of how it can be if I can get out of the way. Now, don't get me wrong. There are days if you come over to my house at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, you would swear that me or Cindy, either one, ever been to a meeting whatsoever, never even got within 4 or 5 blocks, you know. But as a rule, our life is pretty good. I was telling you that story about my sister had this store. And I was sponsoring this guy. This guy was really, really wealthy. He had a lot of money. He'd spend the summers down in South America, or winters in South America. If you live in Montana, that's not a bad idea. And he had been sober for 10 years, and he'd gone out and got drunk for about 5 years, and now he'd been sober for about 5 or 6 weeks. He'd asked me to be a sponsor. the same time I was running this store for my sister. And I talked to my sister just a few minutes before I talked to this guy. And I told my sister, she was depressed. She was clinically depressed. I mean, she was really feeling poorly. And she'd gone through a divorce. She ended up at the store, and, you know, and she's just out of it. I said, Maggie, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll take you out to eat at lunch. And she says she'd like that. So I says, good. So I hung up the phone. Guy calls me. John, I'm going to fire you. He says, I don't want you to be my sponsor anymore. And he started explaining it to me about why he didn't want me to be a sponsor and about how in our home group, we just do too much. I mean, we got meetings we got to go to, and we got things that we do, and we go to jails, and some of them go to treatment centers, and some of them go to psych wards. And he just didn't have to do that stuff. Because, I mean, he'd been sober for 5 weeks, you know, but he was a great salesman. And I'm going to listen to this guy. Yeah. I mean, finally we hung up. I mean, I've been fired 1,000 times. I mean, I've been fired for every. I don't think there's anything new that I could get fired from. I got fired for being too spiritual enough, too involved, not involved. I mean, you just name it. It just goes on forever. And I hung this phone, and I'm thinking, I'm going through my day, and I'm thinking, you know, this guy's right. You know, I have overcorrected. I'm doing a little too much of this A&A stuff, you know? And I can remember, you know, Cindy and I had these fights and stuff, but that's because, heck, we went through some tough times. I mean, anybody would have that problem. And I went and picked my sister up, and I was taking her to lunch. And I just casually mentioned to her that I probably was overcorrecting in Alcoholics Anonymous, because the truth of the matter is, based on what I now know about drinking and about alcoholism, I probably wouldn't need a meeting, because really the truth of the matter is I didn't drink that much. And for the first time in months, she started laughing. And she laughed and she laughed and she got down and she got to crying and she said, get me to a gas station now. And so I got into the gas station. She ran in. She come back out. She still laughed. She's holding herself. She says, my God, you're crazy like you said you was, aren't you? And I said, what do you mean? She says, you don't remember, do you? I said, remember what? She says, you don't remember the last 3 to 4 years that you drank? You never drew a sober breath that whole entire time. I said, well, I guess I'll go to a meeting tonight, I guess. But that's what we fight against. That's the insanity of alcoholism, the thought process prior to the first drink. My case is different. This time, based on what I know. Because I have done this and that for such and such. Because I sponsored X amount of people. Because I went to so many meetings. Because I started such and such group. Don't mean nothing. What means something is, what are you doing today? What are we doing today? Are we helping the new man? Are we volunteering to go to the jails and the prisons and the nut wards? Are we really grateful for our sobriety? Are we really willing to give of ourselves so that other people can have some freedom? And sometimes I got to tell you, the answer is no. I'm not. I am so sick of this. I don't know what's wrong with me today, because I've got important things to do. You know, it's just the way we are. And I think it's all right to be that way, as long as you just keep saying, okay, I'll be there. You know, you're going to be there. I'll be there. I'll see you tonight. You know, hang up the phone. Get in your car. My car's just kind of trained. Cindy, a lot of times, I ain't going to go. Cindy, I'm not going to go either. And the next thing you know, we're in the garage and we're in the car going on down the road. You know, it's such a great benefit that we get here. Just being who we are, being with you people. You guys have loved us so much this week, and I cannot say thank you enough. I cannot say thank you enough. Just phenomenal deal. Somebody was talking about the legacy we have here. You was talking about it. My sponsor, Jim Shaw, died. He had cancer, and the night he died was Montana State Roundup. And Tom, I was there, and Tom and I both knew that he was dying. We got a phone call. The person over the PA said, John or Tom, come take the phone. And Tom, being the gentleman, he says, I'll get it. He says, I'll get it. And so he went and got the phone. He come back and told me the deal. The next morning, Tom gave this talk about the legacy. About our legacy, about what we have here and how precious it is. And what kind of, and he asked, what kind of legacy are we leaving? Me, what kind of legacy am I leaving? And I think it's important for us to think about that every once in a while. You know, I was looking at your thing, your deal here. You have so many people that have affected my life in here. And you know, a lot of them are dead. But they're not dead. They're alive. They're alive, and they're here, and they're here now. And that is the gift. That is the gift that we have. As long as we're carrying the message, their message continues. Thank you very much.